You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Welcome back to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's political commentary.
With the newsroom's Mark Delder this morning. Kia ora, Mark. How are you today?
I'm great. How are you?
Good. It's lovely to chat with you this morning. There's been a lot going on since we last spoke, particularly in the transport and the energy sectors. Let's start with the big BlackRock announcement this week. $2 billion is going to be put into helping New Zealand make 100% renewable energy as a target. And this is coming from BlackRock Investment, which is an overseas investment fund. What's your biggest takeaways from this announcement? What should people be, I guess, noticing from this?
Yeah, I think it's interesting. It's not necessarily taxpayer money that's going into this. BlackRock is like you say, an investment fund. So people will basically put their money with BlackRock, and it will try to invest in things to make them more money. Really, what it is a sign of is that the international sort of big finance community is looking at New Zealand and looking at our attempts to build more renewable energy and to reach a fully or almost fully renewable grid, and saying, yeah, we think this is pretty likely to happen. This is pretty feasible, and we have faith in this, and that's why we're willing to invest our money in it. So it's a sign that sort of things are moving in the right direction. I wouldn't necessarily say it's going to tip us over the edge in favor of something that wouldn't have happened without the money, but it's certainly helpful and certainly kind of a vote of confidence, I suppose.
In terms of looking to international players to support infrastructure decisions like this, do you think it's likely we will see, particularly when it comes to the climate sphere, more of these type of relationships from governments in the future?
Yeah, I think it's certainly possible. I think that there's a sense that there isn't always enough capital in New Zealand to go around. Although, if you look at the sort of offshore wind space, for example, we've got five developers that are looking to build things, build offshore wind farms in New Zealand, and one of them is pairing with the NZ Super Fund. So that's a sign that yes, our finance flows are running, but there's also people from overseas that are interested. I think it's not particularly, some people have been concerned around the involvement of private capital in the electricity market, where actually, this is mostly run by private companies. Some of them, the government does have a majority shareholder stake in, but they're run like private companies. It's not necessarily too concerning. But, you can imagine a scenario where if private capital were involved in other parts of government policy, that would be concerning. I just think in the energy space, not as big a deal.
Mm, and as you said, there is a bit of a precedent there. I guess we are still waiting to see from the Labour Party what their big climate announcements are going to look like heading into the election year, and also other, major policy areas where perhaps the Greens or National or Te Pāti Māori have started to make some announcements. We are still waiting for Labour's. Do you think that some of these, government decisions that they're making at the moment are going to be any indication of what might be priorities for them when they start to announce what they're campaigning on?
Yeah, I think it's certainly possible. I guess the question is going to be, when they announce their policies, are those policies going to be just, continue achieving this, continue progress towards this target, continue doing this policy, the clean car discount, for example, or are they actually going to have new ideas in there as well? Given the amount of sort of climate policy that's gone on this parliament term, it's easy to understand why they might be running out of ideas, but I guess we'll have to wait and see.
Let's talk a little bit about transport. Let's start with the government's announcement around the Waitemata Harbour crossings, and then also talk a wee bit about the National Party, because they've been talking about roads, probably to not a lot of people's surprise. But let's start with the Waitemata Harbour crossings. This is quite an interesting situation. We're seeing a bit of pushback from the Greens. We're seeing the National Party say they think it's a good idea, but the government's not going to be able to achieve it in their timeframes. We're seeing a wee bit of disgruntlement from the mayor of Auckland City. What's your takeaway from the announcement this week?
Yeah, it seems to be one of those things that's kind of hard to believe because of the amount of money involved and the scale of infrastructure suggested. The government definitely seems to be enjoying tunneled light rail. because not only are they planning to tunnel under the harbour, but planning to tunnel overland on the North Shore as well. And the original light rail, you know, from the airport to the city is supposed to be tunneled as well. Tunneling comes with a much higher cost than just doing an overland route. And so you start to look at some of these things and you're thinking, you seem to have chosen the most expensive possible options for the number of lanes and crossings that you want. Is it really feasible? You know, how often does New Zealand build these big $50 billion kind of projects? Not that often. And how often do they deliver them in any reasonable amount of time?
It is an interesting one. We obviously need those crossings. We need some way to get more effectively from the North Shore to the city and back again. But do you have any thoughts around the prioritisation, particularly of the road tunnels versus the light rail project? The timeline for that is looking, I guess it's been tabled, but it could be changeable. What's your thoughts there?
Yeah, the question, I guess, is around building more crossings or more crossing capacity for future demand, and what's that demand going to look like? You know, from a climate perspective, you'd want to have fewer cars, you'd want to have more public transport, more active transport. But the government's proposal here is actually to add more car lanes as well as more lanes for buses, more lanes for active transport and the light rail sort of tunnels. So everyone gets something extra when really we kind of want to be reallocating some of our car space to low emissions forms of transport, which can also move people more efficiently than private vehicles. And after that, you then start to look at how you build extra capacity into the system. So there's a lot of working you could do just on the Harbour Bridge right now that would make more capacity to move people over. And eventually, yes, that will probably fill up. And so you do want to have mm-hmm. another alternative. But yeah.
Well, let's talk about roads from the National Party's perspective, because they've been making some big announcements this week, which a lot of people are questioning the costing of, including you've written about this for Newsroom, and arguing that perhaps they are $2.5 billion short in their estimates. Can you explain a little bit about how those numbers have come about?
Yeah, definitely. So basically what National has done is for each of their roads, they've taken the latest available public figure for how much it would cost to build them. The problem being that some of those figures date back to when National was last in government because Labour didn't want to build these roads and National does. And some of them are from, you know, more than a couple of years ago. So they've missed out on the big period of inflation that we've had since. So National just copy-pasted those numbers, basically. They haven't applied any inflation adjustment. We know that inflation in the construction sector and in infrastructure has been higher than inflation in the rest of the economy. But even just taking that rest of the economy measure and applying it to each of the roads based on the date that they were originally costed, you get about $2.5 billion extra that National hasn't really planned for. You know, road costings and big infrastructure costings are always imprecise. And when you're the mm-hmm. opposition, you don't have the resources of the government to be able to, you know, deploy hundreds of public servants to figure out the exact number. But something like this is pretty easy to have caught and to have dealt with. But they chose not to because, at least in part, presumably, because it would make the size of the package larger.
Is that concerning? Is that something that rings any alarm bells for you, that way of costing things? Or is this just politics in action, the sort of pre-election campaign season in full swing?
Yeah, I think it is the politics of it. You know, I don't think there's an expectation that people are going to hold them to account for the exact numbers that they put in their document when they actually start building the roads, if they get into government. And so it's a pretty sort of low risk, medium reward strategy to take. It points to the value of an independent office in Parliament that can cost party policies, which is something that the government suggested last term. National rejected at the time, but are now on board with it. And so it would be good to see that come along relatively quickly so that we don't have to have these arguments about fiscal holes and fiscal gaps every single year.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, thank you so much for your time this morning, Mark. That might be all we have time for today, but we'll talk to you again in a couple of weeks. Take care.
That sounds great. Thanks, Rachel.
Kia ora.
You just heard a bit of political commentary.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B-card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.